Chris, and welcome to another middle-aged mini-episode on the Middle-Aged and Creeped Out podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hey, creepies, welcome to Middle-Aged Mini 241. Nate is your tech engineer, and we are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we're middle-aged and creeped out. How's it going?
Great night.
Going good.
Like night, night with an
get
N.
Get to the mic now.
Night with an N, not with a K. Sorry. Although it could be with a K.
I'm still in great, editing mode.
Great night. Oh, jeez. Hold on.
What's going on here?
Well, let's catch this conversation by the horns. So hold on.
What is going on here?
Stand still. Who's talking about what?
Yeah. It's been a good night.
Yeah.
Had a good guest chat.
With a K. Mm-hmm. Sorry. But I'm bringing it back around there.
Cut his mic.
It'll make sense when we get to the topic, right? No.
Okay.
Maybe.
I guess.
Sure. Sure it will.
We did have a good episode, or full episode, is what I'm going to say. Good guest chat. Great guest chat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get right to it. Sean, what are we talking about?
Well, this is my pick, and it is on The Questing Beast.
The Questing Beast.
And if interested, please go check out our show notes for the source links we used for this topic.
So I want to ask you, how did you come up with the said questing beast?
Well, I got my AI out. No, I'm kidding. I do need to do that, though. Like, now I feel inspired after talking to Mark.
So I had never heard of this beast, this creature.
I haven't either. So I was looking up. So I've sometimes, every once in a while, you know, because I got plenty of time on my hands, I look through mythical beasts and I look through cryptids, and I've thought, we've talked about this one, we've talked about that one, this one's not that interesting. And this one comes up, and I just kind of skim over it, and I'm kind of like, what is the questing beast? What is this? Well, it is a very old and mythical beast. The questing beast, or the beast Gadassant. Old French, I'm not going to go there. Modern French, not going to go there either. It's even harder. Is a cross animal monster appearing in many medieval texts of the Arthurian legend and modern works inspired by them. In the French prose cycles and consequently in the quasi canon, they're making it sound like it's not history. Of course, we know we've talked about King Arthur before. We know this is historical. Of the Le Morte d'Arthur, the hunt for the beast is the subject of quests, futility undertaken by King Pellinore and his family, and finally achieved by Sir Palamedes and his companions. It is this. It is part leopard, part dragon, serpent, deer, and it's ugly. Not to be judgy, but it is one of the most atrocious looking things out there. There's a reason for that.
Yep. Body of a leopard, head and neck of a serpent.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Thighs and tail of a lion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot.
Feet
the lion.
Of a hart.
Yeah,
which is a deer.
Yeah, of the heart.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
So
because I'm reading, I'm like, what is a heart?
This is the one thing.
H-A-R-T.
So most things are going to kill you, or they're motivated by, you know,
bloodlust,
something, right? Food, killing, whatever. These big monsters. This one is not. This one runs from you. And it is elusive, and you can never catch it, which is not cool. But, of course, throughout, you know, made-up history, it became a quest. Like, I can catch this thing. I'm the greatest hunter ever. Well, guess what? You can't. And it doesn't leave tracks because the little deer hooves are so, like, graceful, apparently, that it goes through the forest, and it leaves little to no tracks. So you can't track.
Really?
Yeah. And then it's so skinny because it's, like, leopard-like. That it goes through and you can't keep up with it.
Okay. Yeah, it says, rather than being an enormous creature, it was small. In fact, it was smaller than a fox.
So, yeah, in some of these depictions, it makes it look huge. In other ones,
yeah, I thought it was big.
Tiny. Yeah. So, I don't know. And then, King Arthur had about a bazillion different tellings. You know, you might say, well, I thought this was it. Yeah, but over here, they tell it this way. So, I went back and listened to our King Arthur episode. By the way, it was a really good episode. So when listening to it and looking over this stuff, talking about King Arthur again. So do you guys remember? Okay. Excalibur. Was it the sword in the stone, or was it the sword that came out of the lake, or is it both? Out of the lake. I referred
Lady of the Lake.
I referred to
I thought it was a stone.
See, that's what I thought. And in some tellings it's both.
Yeah.
But other ones they say the sword and the stone was a completely different sword and it was broken in battle, even though he pulled it out, he became king, and it was Merlin inspired or whatever. But it was still magical, but it wasn't Excalibur, and it was broken in battle, and then they're like, uh-oh, what are we going to do now, Arthur? And then he took Arthur to, I guess, what sounds like Avalon, and this mystical place, and that's where Excalibur came from. So Excalibur, and they don't know what it is or why it came there and who the heck the Lady of the Lake is. The other thing I figured out, not in our discussion, but from listening to this stuff, Sir Lancelot, one of the most famous knights, was raised by the Lady of the Lake. I'm like, where did that come from? So there's so many different facets of King Arthur. Like I said, when I say that it's real, no, it can't be. It's like so made up. But I do remember that I heard this when I was listening to the episode, that for about 1,000 years, the English took it as history. And they, even to this day, King Arthur is still revered. They said after World War II, there was a resurgence in King Arthur because the English needed something to believe in again, because they almost fell during, World War II. And then they were in such a horrible state that they needed that inspiration from their roots and strength that they came from. And King Arthur is what a lot of people grasp for. So I did not realize that.
You did not know that. I've got right here, it says that the name of the questing beast comes from the great noise that it emits from its belly, a barking like 30 couple hounds questing. Did you see that?
I did see that.
And it says, yelping or barking, especially of small dogs or foxes. The questing beast is a variant of the mythological medieval view on giraffes, whose generic name of Camelopardalis originated from their description of being half camel.
Generic.
Yeah. Originated from their description of being half camel and half leopard. There you go.
Do you want to know how it came about?
Sure.
It gets gross. Incestual, right?
The questing beast is a monstrous animal, the offspring of a princess and a demon. The princess lusts after her own brother, a prince named Galahad, son of King Hippomenes. The demon convinced her to sleep with it, promising in return that Galahad would fall in love with her. However, the demon ended up impregnating the princess and manipulated her into accusing her brother of rape. In response, King Hippomenes executed Galahad by having him torn apart by a pack of dogs.
Wow.
Just before he died, Galahad prophesied to his sister that she would give birth to a monster that would make the same sound as the pack of dogs that were tearing him to pieces.
See, that makes sense. Wow. That's really disturbing.
The questing beast was the child born to her.
Interesting.
So telling makes the most sense because it tells all the little pieces of it. There was another version there that it was an incestual relationship between a princess and her brother, and she did not want that to happen, but he forced himself on her, and she died during childbirth. But before she died, she basically cursed him and said, I hope this is some kind of a demon or monster, or whatever. And it came out this horrible, monster, and she died. So there's a couple different versions of it, but I like that one a lot better. But yeah, it's pretty weird, right? And then so there's a lot of different people who quested after this beast and did not capture it. One of them is Sir Palamedes. He is a Saracen knight central to the legend of the questing beast, a chimeric creature from Arthurian legend or myth. He is famously known as the knight of the questing beast and pursued it relentlessly throughout his life, symbolizing an unattainable quest and personal struggle. The questing beast, also called Galasant, we said, is described as the hybrid creature with the head, neck, serpent. We already described all that. So Palamedes' pursuit of the beast is deeply symbolic. Initially, it mirrored his unrequited love for Iseult and his worldly desires. After converting to Christianity, his spiritual transformation allowed him to finally slay the questing beast along Sir Percival and Sir Galahad during their Grail quest. Galahad is the only knight that actually was able to find the Holy Grail, at least in the stories. So this marked his redemption and the end of his endless chase. So he eventually did catch it, supposedly, but I don't know. And there's other ones where it's like it was impossible. If you chased it, it would run and you could never catch it was the idea. There's a story that King Arthur came across the questing beast and he had zero interest in hunting it. He knew the stories about what it had done to other men. And supposedly it was around the time. So, you know, the fall of Camelot and all that kind of stuff. You know, he'd been betrayed by Sir Lancelot. Sir Lancelot ran off to his own fortified place, you know, with Guinevere because they were going to kill Guinevere and all these things, right? Mordred comes in, Mordred is the son of King Arthur and all this stuff. Well, this is all going down and he goes out into the woods with all this heaviness and, oh my gosh, you know, where did my kingdom go that was supposed to be this beautiful thing? You know, all kingdoms rise and they all fall. Well, it was falling and he goes out and he's just in this terrible state and the questing beast comes and is just like having like a stare moment with him, you know, and like King Arthur's definitely not going to chase him. And he just said that he kind of nodded, the questing beast nodded and then took off. And shortly after that is when, cause King Arthur goes to confront, Sir Lancelot and there's a long, you know, issue with that. Well, Mordred takes over in the meantime and like, he's dead or he's not coming back or whatever. So he takes the throne. King Arthur eventually leaves Sir Lancelot alone to go fight Mordred. And that's when they end up having their, you know, their fight to the death where they both have fatal wounds. And they said in that skirmish where, and then Sir Lancelot realizes like, oh, you know, he's not after me anymore. You know, he was still loyal to King Arthur, but King Arthur wasn't having it. Well, then he gets there too late. And so Sir Lancelot's the last one to see like, everything in disarray and the king's dead and Mordred's dead and they take him off to Avalon and all that stuff. And, but supposedly they said the questing beast was seen on the grounds, like just kind of almost like it was, it being around was foretold the demise of Camelot or it was waiting for that. It reminds me of Ragnarok, you know, like, you know, the dragon destroying everything through fire, you know, and the questing beast is like, yeah, I knew this was going to happen. And kind of just checking everything out, like, yep, you know, everything's going to come to an end. And so that's it. To me, it's very interesting, and it's not something well known. Like, I don't remember hearing about the questing beast during anything that I've heard about King Arthur. But it's definitely connected to it, and it's just interesting. I mean, it's weird, and it's you
very
know
weird.
Origins are strange, but it has so many facets in the King Arthur legends and myths and pseudo history that it's just cool.
The barking sound you would think would be coming from its mouth like a dog.
It's indigestion, right?
The sound came from its belly.
Yeah, yeah.
Said it's the sound that was from its unborn offsprings inside.
Ooh, that's disgusting.
It's a weird
hello,
creature.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling.
Very weird.
Yeah, a questing beast. It's very...
There's an older version of it. And it is said to be white and the head and neck of an ewe, which is a ram, the body of a fox, the legs of a dog, and tail of a lion. So yeah, that was an earlier version of it.
Yeah, this is completely bizarre.
That's what makes it my choice, right? Yeah, it's just it's got so many layers, like I said, and it's just it's strange. But but to be honest, if you lay out all the things about King Arthur, Merlin, and all the, you know, so you know, the round table and that whole idea that it was broken and battered and destroyed, and that concept of, you know, everybody's equal, nobody is above anybody else. And it's a really cool concept, right? And it lasted for a while, at least in that story. And, you know, there's 12 basic knights, and then they say that there might have been upwards of 100 and some or 300 and some, you know, knights. And it's just wild. That whole thing is cool. But like I said, for there to be something that's like a symbolic monster, cryptid, whatever the heck this thing was, and it's just, it's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's why I wanted to bring it to you guys. You know who's going to love this?
No, I don't know.
Pete Peterson. He's just going to love it.
You think so?
I think so. And if he doesn't, I'm going to be shocked. I'm going to be dismayed. I'm going to be a little hurt. It might take me a couple of days to get over it, but I'm just predicting that Pete Peterson's going to love it.
One of the websites I looked at said that the head was specifically a cobra.
Ooh, now that's cool.
And it held life and death itself. So a cobra, that would suck.
Watch out, they spit.
Yeah, spitting cobra. I spit on you. Yeah, it's an interesting creature. Interesting myth. So anything else on the questing beast?
This is probably one of the coolest pictures of it.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like four or five things going on down there.
Fandom.
It doesn't know what it is.
It has no idea.
I don't have anything else on the questing beast. I think we've covered
more or less what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's weird.
It is weird.
It's weird. It's not well known is what I figured out. In
it's like a little kid just said, you know what? I'm going to make a creature. Right? And I'm going to make it a part this and part that.
Merlin did this, right? He's like, this sounds good. This sounds like a good idea.
Merlin.
Mm-hmm. Why is your duck blue? Because I've never seen a blue duck.
I want a blue duck.
I'm on Billy. Well, if that's all we got on the questing beast, that was interesting. Fun to talk about. I think the creepies will like that.
Mm-hmm.
A little mythological. Nate, help us out.
This was definitely a quest. And I think we defeated it.
Hmm.
And that's a wrap.
You think so?
I don't know about that. Just smirked. Gave us a lot just of credit. Smiled at us and smirked and ran away, right?
It definitely was a quest. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Nate. And we want to thank you, creepies, for listening to our Middle-Aged Mini 241 and our discussion on the questing beast. So until next time. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
See ya.